As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Loudermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. Tell me, Allison, have you ever secretly wished you had a prosthetic arm, like a fake, you know, like a robotic hand or anything?
Until this afternoon, I might have answered you with a no, but there's some pretty cool prosthetic devices out there. And a little research into Oscar Pistorius. Have you heard about this guy? You probably did.
Oh, this is the Blade Runner, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's awesome. And it's funny too, because I actually do think about prosthetic limbs when I'm running. That's when I've most thought about it. And I think, you know, wow, I'm really grateful to have my legs and running, and gosh, my legs are tired, and maybe I should go get a Blade Runner like Oscar Pistorius.
Like maybe you should lose your legs and replace them with super high tech prosthetics.
Like a cheetah.
Yeah.
That thing is awesome. Hey, just so you guys know, we are going to be talking about prosthetic limbs today, and we know that there are a lot of people out there who have lost a limb, and we don't take that lightly, but we will be talking pretty candidly about it today.
Yeah, and I have this kind of mixed thing about it, because as a kid, I loved the idea of like having a robot hand or something, because it was all over the place, you know? It's like you're watching pirate movies and they have peg legs, or you're watching He-Man cartoons and this guy named Lockjaw and he had like this big robot arm. And
yeah.
And so, you know, it's and I still find a lot of that stuff really cool, you know? It's all that, you know, billion-dollar man type of thing, you know, and, you know, cyborgs and making somebody stronger through technology and impervious, you know. But then at the same time, I'll think about it and, I'll be like typing or something like, man, if I lost a hand, that would really suck. Like, how would I move my mouse, you know?
Well, you might not lose that functionality with some of the technologies available today.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about some of them. But can we talk about Oscar for a second, Blade Runner?
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about him.
So just a reminder for those of you guys who don't remember him, he was the sprinter who was on track to make the South African Olympic team. And according to a Wired story by Josh McHugh, this was Oscar's story. He was born with two toes on each tiny foot, and each leg was missing its fibula. And the fibula is that long, thin bone that connects your calf muscle, and it forms outside the ankle. So
they were in pretty bad shape.
Yeah. It was missing, actually.
Yeah. So it was pretty much a situation of either keep these and use a wheelchair for the rest of your life, or double amputee and sort of start from scratch, put some prosthetics on there and, you know, and learn how to use them at an early age.
Right. So Oscar's parents obviously went with the latter choice. And at age 1.5, according to Wired writer McHugh, Pistorius took his first steps on a set of fiberglass pegs. And now he's pretty darn fast on them. Just to give you an idea of how fast, he can cover 9.4 meters per second on them.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen a picture of these, I mean, do a search for it, because it's really awesome. I think either this guy or a guy with a pair of these showed up in the first season of My Name is Earl.
No kidding.
Yeah, he like runs around on them, and it looks awesome because they have this like, they bend backwards and they're like springy, and to the untrained eye, they look just like a curved piece of metal, you know, and not something that's like ultra, you know, designed.
It looks a little bit like a hockey stick
yeah.
in the end.
Yeah, imagine a guy like running on like hockey sticks, and except just having like this awesome spring to his step and just like really fast. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and they're pretty expensive too for all that spring and power. They're between $15,000 and $18,000 per cheetah, per blade. So Pistorius' fate for the 2008 Olympics was that he eventually was cleared, and he was going to be able to run in the Beijing Olympics if he qualified. But he in fact didn't. He didn't make the Olympic qualifying standard in the 400. But this is kind of interesting. I was thinking about it. I mean, Oscar is so fast that I was wondering, you know, with these type of cheetah blades and these type of prosthetic devices, could we eventually see the Paralympics, you know, breaking records that the Olympic athletes can't?
I don't know. It's worth thinking about. You know, as the technology improves and we're better able to replicate, you know, the use we would get out of an actual limb. You know, it stands to reason we might reach the point where we could, you know, improve upon the design to a certain degree.
And improve they have. Prosthetic devices have come a long way.
Yeah, there was a time long ago where if you lost your, you know, arm to a, you know, a saber-toothed tiger and whatnot, then, well, I don't know about a saber-tooth. I'm not sure about the crossover there. Let's say woolly mammoth bit your arm off. You know, you wouldn't be able to really get a prosthetic. But they really started popping up pretty early in history. They found one on a mummy, didn't they? Like a fake toe?
Yes, they did. They found a 3,000-year-old fake toe on an Egyptian noblewoman.
Yeah. And, and tell me about the Roman dude.
About the Roman dude. The Roman dude was a guy named Marcus Sergius, and he was a Roman general who lost his right hand while he was battling in one of the Punic Wars. And Marcus ordered a replacement hand made of iron to hold his shield, and he got his Roman self back out there on the battlefield.
See,
that was a tough guy.
Yeah, and this ties into the whole like childhood like you know love of the idea of prosthetic limbs. Like, here's a guy that's so awesome. He like goes out and he's this, you know, action killing machine. And then like they take his hand and he's like, I can just, you know, slap a shield on there and I'm good to go. So, that's pretty impressive.
So one thing is that, old Marcus may have been buried with his amputated limb because people used to believe that if you lost a limb while you were on Earth, that you should be buried with it because otherwise you, might be limbless in the afterlife as well.
Yeah. Kind of like with the mummies and the Coptic jars with mm-hmm. their organs in them.
But of course, what rogue group in history was renowned for their prosthetics?
That would be the pirates.
Indeed. And
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to point out that in the Atlanta area, there's actually an amputee prosthetic clinic, and they have a pirate on the sign, like a cartoon pirate. And their phone number, I probably can't give out the first part of it, but it's like, you know, whatever, fake leg, you know.
Oh, okay. So that's direct and to the point.
Yeah, and interesting, too, because it's like, you know, they seem to have a real sense of humor or, you know, about the use of prosthetics and love pirates. So it's interesting.
Yeah, so back in the olden days, wood and metal and leather were the materials of choice for your prosthetic limbs.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've become kind of high-tech, as we were talking a little bit about with Oscar. So let's talk about some of the newer ones. And meanwhile, we should probably give you a little run through the basic parts of a prosthetic limb.
Yeah, these are the basics. You're going to want a pylon.
You sure will. Cause mm-hmm. it's like the heart of the prosthetic.
Yeah. This is like the skeleton internal frame. You know, this is replacing the bone that was lost, essentially.
Right. It's providing the structural support, and it used to be often made from metal rods. Nowadays, you might be looking at a lighter carbon fiber type composite. And then you have the socket, right? And so the socket is the part of the prosthetic device that meets the residual limb or the limb stump, as the case mm-hmm. may be. And a good fit here is obviously going to be critical because you don't want that thing rubbing against you the wrong way. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a good fit here is really critical. And then lastly, you have the suspension system. You got to have something to attach it to your body or make sure it stays on. And this could be, you know, whether it's just a suction, which is pretty cool, or you might have some sort of harness system or a strap, a belt or sleeve. And they can be pretty inconspicuous.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess the strap ones are kind of the old model.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think the suction is more current. But let's talk about some of the super cool ones. Enough with the definition stuff. Let's get to the... So why do we have such a need for this? I mean, war, definitely. I mean, you have somebody rolling over a roadside bomb and maybe they actually survive that incident, but they lose a limb. In fact, a lot of soldiers are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq and theaters around the world and, you know, they've lost a limb or they've lost multiple limbs.
Mm-hmm. And then you have areas of the world where you still have a lot of landmines and unexploded ordnance. So, you know, people are losing limbs, sadly, to that.
Right. And then you throw in accidents with machinery or fireworks, and you have a pretty major need in both developing and developed countries.
Now, this is something that I found really exciting. And this is, they call this osseointegration.
Right.
And this is, apparently titanium, can be made to actually fuse with the bone.
Oh, right. I was reading about that in Popular Mechanics.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is like the ultimate, you know, talking about anchoring systems. Like if you can actually anchor it to the bone, you know, in a very, you know, firm manner, then that's better than any of these methods.
Yeah, and so far they've used it in dental and facial implants, and of course now it's being considered for limb prosthetics.
Yeah, well, they used it on a German Shepherd named Cassidy.
Indeed, they did, and it looks like North Carolina State University is going to try 6 more of these operations in 2010 that involve osseointegration on amputee dogs,
and possibly an ocelot.
I saw that.
Yeah. It's amazing, like some of the animal prosthetics they've come up with, which on one level, it's like this is the place to test, you know, technologies, you know, because animals are really bad about like losing limbs. You know, how many 3-legged cats and dogs you see all the time? You know?
Right. And it never seems to make a darn bit of difference.
Well, they don't really care. Generally, they don't seem to care. Yeah. They can lose a limb and they're like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. But yeah. You sent me that picture of the elephant with the prosthetic.
Yeah. From the Thai Burmese border. It lost a leg, and they created this prosthetic leg for an elephant. So that was pretty amazing.
We also saw one when we were researching this of the bill.
Oh yeah, the Romanian stork named Uzonca.
Yes, Uzonca. Uzonca got a prosthesis.
Yeah, like somebody had been mean to this bird, and damaged its bill, and they created a prosthetic bill so it can function.
More recently, I saw Dean Kamen's one. Did you see the video on the Colbert Show? Or
yeah, with that awesome hand.
Right, where he high-fived Colbert with his prosthetic arm. Yeah, so this was the founder of FIRST, Dean Kamen, and it's pretty cool. As far as I know, it's not available, but the technology is pretty advanced. So this arm can pick up a raisin or a grape on the table without destroying it. So it has dexterity. It has those fine motor skills down. And Kamen actually got the request from DARPA. DARPA said, hey, we want the vets to come back and have better technologies available to them. And amputee technology really isn't there right now. So Kamen's been working on this for a while, and he wound up taking it down to the Walter Reed Military Hospital and testing it out. The arm can sense pressure and temperature, and basically the more pneumatic pressure you put on it, the more it's attached.
Oh, cool. Some of that technology, you know, was explored in the space industry.
Yeah, I saw that.
For space gloves, the big thing, because if you have this huge thick layer between yourself and say sensitive, equipment on a satellite you're trying to repair, you know, it's like trying to play piano in, kitchen mitts or something, you know?
Right.
So the idea here is, you know, create gloves that can sense those things and can transfer those back to the wearer.
Right. And in case you're despairing, you know, because it sounds like a lot of these technologies aren't available. Well, some of them are, actually. There are a lot of companies operating the space, and some of these cutting-edge prosthetics are already available. So there was one device that I read about called ProDigits, and it's made by a Scottish company by the name of Touch Bionics. And this particular device can replace any or all fingers on your hand. And it comes with this, like, tiny little motor and a gearbox that's mounted at the base. And they're commercially available. Okay, so here's the thing. Big cost. Mm-hmm. $60,000 to $75,000, and that's going to include fitting and occupational therapy. My question is, I wonder if the Veterans Administration would cover this. I mean, how much of that cost is going to be covered for an amputee? You know, how much is the government going to contribute toward that?
Yeah.
So it seems like it's a little pricey still.
Well, but I mean, it's you know, it's kind of like a PR thing. You know, it's like you're going to convince people to join the army when, you know, they see people with missing limbs everywhere. But if everybody's got really, you know, awesome prosthetics, it's probably not even going to be visible. And if, you know, and if it is visible, you'll say, hey, they really took care of those guys after they took one for the team.
Right. And just to emphasize the motions on this particular ProDigit device, I mean, you can write with it.
Oh, wow.
I read one thing where the guy said that his handwriting was, in fact, better than it was before. So he's very pleased with his handwriting.
Yeah, well, some of us have really bad handwriting. So, I mean.
Would you include yourself in that
category?
I would
include myself in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I found really interesting about amputees is that apparently about half of them, according to a 2008 article on the U.S. Navy website, suffer from phantom limb pain.
Right. So this is pain that feels like it's coming from a body part that's no longer there, according to the Mayo Clinic. And according to the clinic, this type of pain was once considered psychological. You know, people are, I don't know about that. But now we figured out that these sensations originate in the spinal cord and the brain. And I read a really cool New Yorker article about this a while back, and it was profiling a behavioral neurologist by the name of Villa Yainer, Ramachandran. Apologies to Dr. Ramachandran if I messed up your name. And he was working on this phantom limb pain problem, and he came up with something called mirror therapy.
Oh, I've seen some stuff about this, yeah.
Right. So we know that phantom limb pain can be pretty acute.
Mm-hmm.
And so the neurologist had this idea to use mirror therapy. And what this involves is that you hold up a mirror and say you're missing a leg.
Mm-hmm.
And you hold up a mirror next to your leg. And so it appears as if you have two legs.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, this... this helps out with your brain and the pain that you're experiencing, and it seems to work, or at least it reduces the pain to tolerable levels, and in some people, it may reduce the pain entirely.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty innovative and a really simple therapy that could be available to a lot of people who do need it. So we talked about phantom limb pain. I want to talk about something called apotemnophilia. Had you heard of this before today?
Yeah. This is one I read about a while back. This is where you have this... this compulsion or even a desire to amputate part of your body.
Right. So there's a John Hopkins psychologist back in 1977 called John Money. How awesome is that name?
It's money.
It is money, especially if, you know, he had a doctoral degree and he could call himself Dr. Money.
Yeah, I never understand when people have those weird names, like if like dentists who get names like Dr. Payne. Like, you know, I would consider changing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least spell it with a Y.
Did you ever see that Seinfeld with the proctologist?
Yeah, what was his name?
I forget. That's what I'm thinking of right now. But anyway, apotemnophilia was also called body integrity identity disorder and also amputee identity disorder. And it was submitted for inclusion in the DSM-5. Remember the DSM-5? Mm-hmm. It's like the mental health Bible where all the mental health illnesses get classified.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, this is one that like some interpretations of this, at least with some people who suffer from it, it sometimes stems from being like a really high pressure situation where they feel like they need to. It's almost like you're expecting a lot of me, but you would expect less of me if I was missing a hand,
huh.
And therefore I have a compulsion to remove said hand. So
I was sort of thinking a similar to. Transgender folks, you know, along the lines of feeling ill at ease in your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you remove a limb, you know, it's sort of you become yourself.
Hmm.
You know, you become at peace with yourself. It kind of blows my mind to voluntarily seek out an operation where you might want to get rid of a limb. But there's a huge black market for it. And of course, the internet has allowed all sorts of people seeking these kinds of operations to.
So there's like a dude on Craigslist that'll come and chop your hand off if you.
Well,
get in touch with him?
No, because obviously doctors have some legal issues with that. But there was a doctor that I read about, I believe, in Scotland, who performed two such operations, and he said that these operations were some of the most satisfying he'd performed in his life because he really felt like he was helping these people to become more comfortable with themselves. I mean, I having never experienced this particular disorder, I can't understand the compulsion, but I believe that it must be a very strong compulsion. I mean, how could it not be?
I don't know. I can't imagine how. It seems like that kind of thing would keep going. It'd be kind of like surgical addiction, you know? It's like people are never happy with anything. You know, it's like, you know, somebody gets a, you know, an Xbox 360, they're going to want a PS3 or something. You know, it's like, so it's like you lose one hand. I mean, is that going to make the person happy? Or are they going to have to lose another hand now?
I don't know.
We're always wanting more. So it's like if there's a dude out there that like cutting his hand off makes him happy for the rest of his life. Like, I can't think of anything else in life that like does that for anybody, you know? Like sheer happiness for that one operation. I mean, if it works, then God bless him, but I have my doubts.
Yeah. Well, so,
I'm just saying I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to cut my hand off, just in case you're wondering.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, because you need them for typing all of those.
I do, yeah.
But of course, you could type with your new prosthetic device. So
yeah, I'm thinking it'd be like I hunt and peck, so it would just be like one finger.
You hunt and peck?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh Lord, that's so slow. I wonder if producer Jerry hunts and pecks.
Who?
Producer Jerry.
Producer Jerry. I just said Pretty Sue Jerry. I'm like, who's producer? Pretty Sue Jerry?
No, Producer Jerry, you've just forgotten about her because we can't see her anymore.
It still sounds like you said, it's the new headphones. I'm hearing Pretty Sue Jerry.
So. Well,
it sounds kind of like a pimp or something, you know?
Yeah. So listen, if you're not going to get a prosthetic limb, you could always get a hand transplant. Would you be interested in one of these?
Yeah, if I was missing a hand and someone was like, we can give you another hand, then I would...
Well, which
totally
would you choose? Which would you choose?
Between a prosthetic and a real hand? My current self would choose a real hand. My, like, 10-year-old self would choose, like, a robotic hand with lasers.
So you might be interested to know a little bit about the current state of hand transplants. And I learned about them courtesy of Emory Healthcare, which is here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So the technical name is composite tissue allotransplantation. And that just means the transplantation of limbs and other intact body parts.
And this is a really complicated process, right? Because there's a lot of stuff to reattach.
Right, right. I mean, you're talking about bits of bone that may have been shattered. You're talking about connective tissue that's not in good shape. Maybe it's kind of mangled. It is extremely complicated, and it can be a really long surgery. And then perhaps you may have to deal with immunosuppressive issues, and so you're going to be on immunosuppressive medication. I shouldn't say perhaps. You will be on immunosuppressive medication.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. The first hand transplant was performed back in 1964 in Ecuador. Again, to a sailor. The sailor got the transplant, and he had to have it amputated 2 weeks after surgery because, his body rejected it. And then the next hand transplant was performed in France in 1998. And I'm wondering a little bit from this research if France isn't kind of interested in this whole transplant sphere, because they were also the folks who did the face transplant, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're making leaps and bounds over there. I mean, it's all, I think, just awesome. I just love the idea that, you know, someone, if they lose something like that, they would be able to get it back, or at least get, you know, something back that's made of flesh and not plastic.
Right. Right. Although there are some good plastic options out there as well.
Oh, totally. Yes. Yeah.
Right. So, a couple of other interesting transplants that have occurred. There was a uterus transplant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A couple of transplants involving knees. And there was one that even involved a trachea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have an interesting prosthetic. You may remember this, but an Ig Nobel Prize was awarded to an effort to create prosthetic testicles for dogs that had been neutered.
Oh, I forgot about that, right? So they could be imbued with their...
Which, again, this is like back to the whole thing that dogs are fine if they lose a leg. And if you get a dog neutered like you should, then dog's going to be all right. You know, if dog's not... You know, this is all the owner like thinking, oh, my dog doesn't have testicles. How can I live with this? You know, and it's just silly. And that's why I won an Ig Nobel Prize, because it's just like, why are you even wondering? Why are you even coming up with this, you know?
Well, surely if they can have kitty wigs, they can have a set of fake unit for a dog.
And if a Ford truck can have them, then certainly the genuine article should be able to get them back as well.
Right, right. So I think that about wraps it up for our deep dive into prosthetic devices today. We hope you found it interesting.
Not as deep a dive as you can get on the website. Be sure to check out our article about prosthetic limbs. And,
we have a
few other articles too. Just put in like prosthetic limbs and you'll get a couple of different things on the How Stuff Works website about this kind of technology.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a little listener mail I want to share today.
Yeah, you got
down
a few
for
emails?
That?
Yeah.
All right. So I got an email from Eric, and Eric was writing about the business of compost. And
yeah, that compost podcast got a lot of comments.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a lot of composting folks out there, so that's cool. Eric writes, you mentioned in your compost episode that you shouldn't compost your own business and businesses in quotes.
And by business, we mean...
Business.
Yeah, business.
Yeah. So while this is true for poo, it's worth noting that urine is actually a great additive for compost. So he goes on to extol the benefits of all that nitrogen. And he writes, it's probably easier for the gentleman composters out there to... pee into the compost than it is for the ladies. And of course, you need a certain amount of privacy in your yard to make it happen. Good point, Eric. And your neighbors will also probably be happier if you don't reveal your secret compost ingredient when you start sharing the produce from your veggie garden. Indeed. And lastly, Eric says, however, you may want to avoid this technique if you're composting in the kitchen. Again, good point, Eric. We thank you for that and your insight into the composting matter. And we also had a good one from Arizona Andrew. And Arizona Andrew writes that he works for a catering company and he has a ton of food that would otherwise be thrown in the trash. Now I take it home and make lovely, lovely soil from it. And he also attached a picture of his 7-year-old son, Brady, which I thought was so adorable.
Oh, yeah. I love when people send us photos.
Yeah. And he writes, thanks for the podcast. The kids and I love listening. Well, we love you writing. So thanks, Andrew. And one last correction from Gary. We can just call him Galaxy Gary because Gary writes that, I wanted to remind you that a galaxy is not the largest structure in the universe. In fact, galaxies are part of galaxy clusters, which are made up of many galaxies that are gravitationally related to one another. Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, and we discussed galaxies and galaxy clusters in our podcast about how galaxies are formed.
And of course, we're all over them on Facebook and Twitter too. You can find us on Facebook on Stuff in the Science Lab, or our handle on Twitter is LabStuff.
Yeah, so come check us out.
And if you have any stories you want to share about prosthetics or anything else, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.